Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name's Jack Swindlehurst. We're back with you again. Cambridge United flying high in League Two. We never doubted this. We're the most positive podcast on the planet. Joining me today are the usual suspects. Tom Walker, welcome.
Good afternoon. How are we?
Very good, very good. Jordan Warland, hello.
Hello, Jack Swindlehurst. Hello, everyone listening. The bullishness has fully risen.
And hello, Owen Kiernan.
Hello, good afternoon.
So we're coming into this very fresh-faced and, great stuff from Cambridge United in the last month or so, and tipped off with a fantastic victory at Scunthorpe. Didn't think Cambridge United would have too many 5-0 away victories this season. Two on the card already. Just how good was Saturday's game, Owen?
Well, yeah, really good. Trying to be positive here because I see we've had a bit of Twitter feedback saying that we're not positive. I mean, I would like to see some more goals. Yeah, you know, I think we could have had 6 or 7. No, it was a fantastic performance, possibly our most complete performance of the season. And you know, we'll discuss the game further, but we've said in the past that okay, we're looking a little bit light in places. But the last kind of couple of weeks have shown, you know, if you look at the bench yesterday, how much quality was on that bench yesterday?
It's certainly an interesting way to start the season and quite unexpected. What about the lineup yesterday, Tom? What was your feelings about the starting lineup and, as Owen says, the strength on the bench?
A bit like kind of before the Newport game, really. I felt it would have been quite easy for Bonner to just stick with the lineup, which had kind of served them quite well in the game previously. I wasn't expecting to see Houlihan drop out of the team. I wasn't necessarily expecting to see Ironside come back in. I think it was another example of Bonner making quite a brave switch when maybe it's not the obvious thing to do. So for me, it was a little bit of a surprise, but I think what it maybe showed was that Bonner felt the game was there for the taking yesterday. Felt it was a really winnable fixture, which obviously it turned out to be. Get Ironside and the team, two very direct wingers in terms of Hannon and Dunk, and get the ball into the box and sort of cause them some problems. And it was quite refreshing to see it play out like that, really. So in terms of the lineup, I was actually pretty surprised. I was maybe expecting one or two different faces in there, but really well thought out. And it seems like it played to the game plan pretty much perfectly. And obviously, you know, good to see Ironside come in, good to see him on the score sheet. I think he's one of those players who maybe sometimes you feel is at risk of being the guy who works really hard and doesn't get much reward. So it's good to see him getting on the end of a couple of things yesterday. And just another, another one this season, the second 5-0 away victory. Pretty remarkable.
The Scunthorpe keeper clearly wanted to boost Ironside's confidence with his little helping hand with our fourth goal. Very generous of him. Thank you for that. What Tom didn't allude to is that one of us in the group thread before kickoff proclaimed that they would rest Wes Houlihan and keep him fit for the tougher clash on Tuesday night against Port Vale, who will be one of our rivals for the title. So I was a little smug when I saw the lineup, but like Tom says, absolute credit to Bonner for making a big call, you know, resting your best player, a player who the game before was instrumental and got you two assists in a 2-1 win. It takes balls to make those kind of decisions. And it's the opposite to what we saw a little bit earlier in the season, where he was sticking with the same lineup, even if there were questions about the performance despite the results. Whereas, you know, the performance and the result against Newport, there were no questions. We fully deserved it. But he made a big decision in refreshing the lineup, changing the formation, and bringing Ironside in a bit more sort of, giving us a more sort of direct outlet up top and a bit more physicality. And it really paid off. I don't think Ironside is going to rival Mullin for the golden boot, but it was good to see him get a couple of goals and he played really well. I just think in general, patches of great form like this seem to be really few and far between for United. So I think it's absolutely right that we bask in it in it right now. I know it's only six games in, but it's great to see us get, I don't know, tough out results against teams like Tranmere and Newport, where in the past we would have perhaps folded. And yeah, we you know, we've questioned some of the results earlier on in the season and felt that perhaps the result didn't match our performance, and actually perhaps we were lucky with some of the results. But the last two games are like the stark opposite to that, aren't they? They've really reflected our performance and really, really been well deserved. And it was delightful yesterday to just see us take advantage from these positions of being on top in games and competing, not collapsing, and just being really, really ruthless. And you know, Scunthorpe weren't very good. They're going to struggle this season, but you know, as bad as they were, we made them look even worse with our energy and our pressing and the fact that we were so relentless and yeah, we really sort of ran them ragged. And that was just such a thrilling thing to watch and see, you know, seeing us play without fear and seeing us play full of confidence. It was amazing. And long may it continue.
That's one thing I was really, really excited to see, because it's something we don't get much as United fans, is, you know, seeing a team like you say, like pressing just constantly throughout the game, you know, even I think like towards the game, like 85 minutes in, you know, we were just going for it. Like, you know, with Boateng and Nibs, you know, they wanted more goals. They wanted, you know, to stake their claim to, you know, to get in the starting 11. And, you know, I think there are times under previous managers when, you know, you get 2-0 up, you get 3-0 up, and complacency kind of starts to creep in, and you just think, we'll take a foot off the gas a bit. And, you know, before you know it, you've conceded, and then, you know, something goes against you, you concede another one, and what was looking like, you know, going to be a comfortable 3 or 4-0 victory and ends up being a 3-0 draw. Or
yeah, it's not that long ago since we had a manager who would quite happily park the bus when we went 1-0 up. We don't miss you, Sean Derry. Yeah, no, it was great. Like, it was really, really great to see that pressing. I guess one maybe, sorry to go negative and moan, but one sort of negative from the first half was it, we did feel a little bit, I don't know, I felt like we were a little bit open at the back and gave away a few too many chances, which made me a little bit uncomfortable. And I think that was a consequence of the tempo that we were playing at. Obviously, it worked out for us in this instance. But, you know, I think 2-0 at halftime, it could have been, yeah, it could have easily been 1-1 or so forth. But, you know, we rode that out and yeah, like Owen said, it was great to see us sort of pressing right to the end.
Yeah, I think one thing that was actually quite interesting as well was the sort of dynamic of the game. It's probably the first game this season, certainly from my perspective, that I genuinely expected us to win, which probably made the approach quite difficult maybe for Bonner. You know, I think we've played teams like Exeter away. You know, you never expect a result there. Newport are a team we struggled against. Tranmere expected to beat sort of up there. And this is the first game where I think had we not picked up all 3 points, I do think there would have been genuine disappointment there. And it would have been, you know, a pretty disappointing, really. I don't want this to sound like a backhanded compliment, because I do mean this with, you know, the utmost positivity and sort of praise for the team, but we did take advantage of a really poor side yesterday. And it just goes back to something that we've said on a few occasions already so far this season, that there are times where you look at moments, you look at games and things are happening this season so far that you question whether that would have been the case previously. I know we beat Scunthorpe, you know, away last season, obviously just after Bonner had taken charge, but I did before the game have a horrible niggling feeling that it might result out a bit like the Oldham game. At home last season, I'm not sure if you guys remember it, we made a pretty bright start to the season. We come home to Oldham, first game we're expected to win, and we sort of capitulated. And hopefully that's a sign of things to come, because to be honest, you know, we're top of the league now. We're going to start to become a bit of a trophy for some teams in this league. You know, we're the ones to beat at the moment. And with that comes expectation, not necessarily in the next few games, because obviously we know that we're playing some pretty good teams, but I think people will start to get the idea, rightly so, that there's a chance this season of doing something. And that means that when you're playing at home against teams who are going to be down there, even when you're going away, especially at the moment with no fans there, there's expectation on us, and it's really good to see us actually be able to really take games and really kind of, you know, it's just really positive to see us going to go and put five past the crap team and just really batter them. 70% of the ball yesterday, we had about 27 shots.
Can I just say how fucking glorious it is to hear we're going to be a trophy for some teams, we're top of the league. Oh, fuck me. This is brilliant. This is, I believe, the first pod we've ever done where we've been sat at the summit of League Two. And I feel fucking great. So ask me some questions, Jack. Go on.
So, top of the league. Let's weigh in this positivity a bit. I mean, it's great. But yeah, Jordan, just off the mic there, you were saying about how Paul Mullen, you know, top of the goal scoring charts. And yeah, he's been a fantastic acquisition, regular contributor, question asker to the pod. Omelu's been in touch and he asks, is Mullen the best signing we've made since being back in the EFL? Owen, what do you think on that?
It's early days, isn't it? He's certainly looking bright. I know, Tom, you're a big fan of him. You were quite excited when he signed. I remember just after he signed, kind of saying that, you know, he had a good goal scoring record, and someone on Twitter questioned that. How you doing, mate? He's looking good. He's looking bright. He's what's he on? 9 goals for the season already. Hopefully he'll get into kind of 20 or so, and that's what you need to be up and about there in this division. You know, you need your strikers to be scoring goals. Is he the best signing we've made since being back in the EFL? I don't know. You know, we signed Ice. He was pretty decent, pretty much the only decent thing worth watching during Derry's tenure. I was going to say Dunk, but he obviously signed in the conference. I mean, I think Dunk's probably our best signing of the last decade, isn't he? Without question. So, yeah, best signing back in the EFL. I don't know. You know, we signed Berry back as well, didn't we? So, I don't know. Let's see. He's certainly a contender.
Definitely putting a big stake for that. I think he's in the conversation, which is all we can really ask at this stage. I think I'll be honest, I'm not sure the comment that was made about his sort of previous goal scoring record was actually that unfair. I think he's equaled as of yesterday his sort of all time best in terms of a league season for goal scoring. And that's been one aspect of him that I've been really impressed with, is that I wasn't expecting Paul Mullen to be as prolific as what he has been so far. We'll see how it goes over the rest of the season. But I had him down as maybe like a 10 or 15 goal season striker, where now it looks like it'd be somewhere 20, 25. And that's pretty outstanding, really. And I can see Jordan's face is he looks like he's filled with glee just at the thought of someone who's going to score 25 goals in a Cambridge shirt. But yeah, it's been remarkable. When he signed in the summer, I was really happy with it. I think the comment that I made that I stand by and that we may be seeing in action is that if you have a team of players of that sort of level and that sort of ability, you're always going to be up there and you are going to be in contention for, you know, to do something come the end of the season. Obviously, he's the one that's taking the headlines at the moment, rightly so. He's the goal scorer. He's delivering on that. But I think, you know, we're talking about, while we're on the subject of signings, one area where maybe we haven't given enough credit to is Ben Strang and his team, because he's someone that we've criticised. And I think a lot rightly so over the last few years. There have been mistakes. There hasn't always been a coherent strategy. But alongside Mullen, I think we brought in 10 or 11 players and sort of recruited based on a profile. And I think what we see now is a team that has really got something about them. And yeah, Mullen's obviously front and centre of that at the moment. But yeah, exciting times. I'm not sure if he's the best one we made since we got back into the league. But ask me again at the end of the season, and I might have to give a different answer to that.
What I would say about Paul Mullen is he clearly has absolutely massive testicles. To put a penalty straight down the middle twice in quick succession takes absolute balls. On the subject of balls, it's, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. So perhaps it's a little bit early to say he's the best signing since we've been back in the league. I think Luke Berry's probably got the biggest business case for that. But no, Paul Mullen's been amazing. And what I love And what I have loved about watching him so far this season is he's very clever. He's got great movement and he has this ability to turn defenders. And he reminds me of some of our sort of my favourite and our better strikers of past days, like Kitson and Butler, who also had that kind of that movement. So I'm very invested in Paul Mullin becoming a hero. I'm going to be devastated when he moves to the Championship in January and not be able to smash David Crown's goal scoring record of 27 goals in the season. But until that happens, until that heartbreak happens, fantastic signing. And it was just really great to see that he can link up with other sort of options. You know, Newport game was all about Wes and Mullin coming together and the play between the two and Wes's assists. And then to see him yesterday without Wes in the side playing just as well with, you know, Hannon and Dunk in sort of wider, more conventional winger positions and Ironside alongside him. It's just exciting to think that we've got this talented person who we can slot into a couple of different sort of teams around him. So I'm invested. I don't, at this stage, it's too early to say if he's the best signing since we've been back in the Football League. I would still vote for Luke Berry for that one, even though we didn't sell him for the big money that we should have. But it's amazing that we actually, he's like, what, one goal away from double figures already? He's already scored more than our joint top scorers last season. You know, some of the stats so far are just brilliant. You know, top goal scorers in the whole Football League. You know, the clean sheet record is also immense. Big credit to Bonner for sort of organising the team and getting them sort of set up in a way that they've settled really early and made this really quick start to the season.
Great stuff. Interesting to see the versatility of the Cambridge United team. And yeah, Bonner not just sticking with a system that works, but using those many games in many days and, you know, employing different systems for different games and some pretty brave management, some pretty good management. We're going to carry on being positive for a bit longer. Jono's been in contact and says, who's been the most important player over the opening game so far? And if it isn't Mullin or the Digger, then who is it? Tom, who's your best player of the season so far, most important player of the season?
I think the two you mentioned are probably the ones that come to mind. Obviously, Mullin scoring the goals and the Digger. He's just added something more to that midfield for quite a few years. Probably since the promotion year, actually, with Champion, we've kind of cried out for that kind of midfielder that can kind of connect defence, connect the midfield, break things up. That kind of hard man. I think, Owen, you mentioned that in one of the last pods, we've had one or two that have kind of claimed to be that or that we signed to be that person. They've not really kind of done that job well. And so far, he's been so effective, Paul Digby. I think other than that, if I'm looking kind of elsewhere in the team, I think Hannon's been central to a lot of the good stuff we've done so far this season. You know, I know the goal at Scunthorpe went down as an own goal. It probably was, to be fair. You know, it all came from his work, you know, getting into the box, getting into a position where he can deliver. You know, he's added one or two goals to his game as well. I think he scored in the opening game, scored in the trophy as well. And maybe aside from that, I'd say the fullbacks. I think Noyle's been, again, just terrific this season. Probably one of the highlights of in what was a pretty mediocre season last year. And this season, again, he's just proven he's probably the best right back in the league. There's maybe one or two others that you might be able to have a conversation about, but he'd certainly be amongst it. And I'm really impressed with Iredale as well, a player that I didn't really know too much about. He's not, you know, played too much in the Football League before, but he looks like one who's going to be really crucial to an attacking team as well. So, you know, what he offers going forward is quite impressive as well. I realise that what I'm doing here is pretty much...
You're naming the full 11, mate. Go on, name the full 11.
Which I'm trying not to do, but that's kind of where we're at the moment. And with some of these performances, like, it is hard to pick out one player because even at Scunthorpe, like, you know, you bring Boateng off the bench, he looks like he could be another one of, you know, these sorts of players that you talk about as the most important. Controlled the game, you know, it was almost laughable seeing us bring a player of that ability off it. I think we were 4-0 up at the time. Like, I'm trying to just pick up one or two and sort of answer the question directly, but it is genuinely difficult, and that's full credit to the players, because they're making it a really difficult conversation to have.
Yeah, I think Jono's right that it's Mullin and Digger as kind of the main two. Boateng definitely has the potential to be one of those, and it's good to see him in the squad. Admittedly, it's only until January, because, you know, the Digger is, like Tom was saying, so central and so crucial to why our performances and our form has been what it's been. So if we were to lose him, with O'Neill also out, you would think that we are, you know, we're in trouble. But bringing in Boateng was such a great piece of business. I know he's only had two cameos for us so far, and one of those we were already 4-0 up. So perhaps it's a little presumptuous to judge him at this point, and it'd be better to see him in a game where he's, you know, it's level and there's more to sort of play for. But yeah, he's got the potential to be a really, really great piece of business for us, to cover us for that sort of crucial role that the Digger has brought in. Yeah, the fullbacks have been immense, and they need to be, because Bonner favours this kind of narrower midfield. Although yesterday kind of sort of went against that, actually, with Duncan and Hannon playing more kind of wider sort of winger roles and really stretched Scunthorpe, and that was quite crucial. But normally he sort of plays that narrow midfield four, and it's really sort of imperative that the two fullbacks push on and attack down those sides. So yeah, Noyle and Iredale have been very important players for us so far, and I even think Ironside is a different option is. Yeah, quite an important player for us. But yeah, I think Mullin and the Digger are the main two so far.
I can't disagree with any of that. I think everyone's been excellent this season, those two, you know, especially so. For me, outside of those two, Hannan has been brilliant this season. He's added a lot to his game. He's added goals to his game. He's seems to be playing really well, you know, linking up nicely with... you know, with whoever's behind him, be that Noyle or Dunk or Iredale. You know, he seems to be switching sides during the game. He's really kind of getting under the skin of opposition players, which, you know, you love to see people get wound up, you know, especially by one of our own players. You know, we hate it when there's players like that on the other team. You know, it's just good to see, isn't it?
But that's a really important point, actually, because, I mean, for me personally, I've not been sold on Hannant this season as much as perhaps others. And yesterday, I thought he had his best game of the season so far. So I was, yeah, really positive about his result yesterday. But no, Owen, you make a really good point about the fact that he sort of gets under people's skin and sort of winds them up a little bit. Now, as long as he doesn't push that too far, and we don't see repeats of the kicking incident like Newport, I think it's a great thing to have, you know, to really be able to irritate other teams and then mix into the equation the ability that we have now to bully teams. You know, we're a big team. We've got presence, you know, the Digger, even Iredale is quite tall. You know, we've got an Ironside and obviously Cundy, Taylor and Darling aren't little themselves. So we've got this extra kind of strength and bite that we've not had. I mean, I can't remember the last time we've had that. So without being a dirty team, we are a tough team. We're a strong team for people to play, and that was going to make us hard to beat. Because even if you look at our worst performances so far out of the six, you know, we lost to Exeter, but we weren't completely overrun. We were competitive, and we didn't play particularly great against Tranmere. We held on, but one of the reasons we held on was that we were so tough. So yeah, we've got this, I don't know, it's kind of sort of maybe gone under the radar a little bit because we're smashing so many goals, but we've actually got this kind of core strength in the team, which is something we've not had for such a long time, and ultimately is making us a hard team to beat.
I think one player we didn't mention as well is, you know, we're saying, yeah, you know, we the centre-backs have been looking okay this season. You know, it's nice to see Darling come back in the team. But behind them, Mitov in goal, is. You know, he's not been at fault for any of the goals this year. He's, you know, we've had our doubts about him. We've had our doubts about Burton. But, you know, Mel's been pretty solid this year. He's, you know, he's one of our kind of biggest complaints with him was his kind of his coming for crosses and stuff like that, and his kind of communication, his command of the area. And you know, when he's been called upon this year, he's actually done all right. You know, he seems to be coming for crosses, he seems to be holding crosses. His, you know, his shot stopping was never really in doubt. It was, you know, it was probably the biggest strength of his game, but he's actually looked really good. And you know, I think he deserves a bit of credit for that, because he, you know, on paper possibly is the weakest part of the team, but he's actually been pretty strong this year. And you know, having maybe he needed someone, you know, like a Digby in front of him, you know, to take some of the pressure off the centre backs.
Definitely interesting to see how Mitov has kind of improved, and this could be a coming of age season for him. Good to see Cambridge kind of finding this squad, and I guess there's players that will always miss out in that aspect, or certainly have to take a bit of a backseat. One of them who's featured a lot less than he was last season is Harvey Nibbs, but we did get the news pre-game on Saturday that Nibbs is signing an extension. Will asks, should we be offering contracts to other players out of contract in the summer, and how are we feeling about the Nibbs contract extension, Jordan?
Yeah, I feel it's a good move by the club to lock down a young talent and keep him here for a bit longer. I guess his game time this season is probably going to be limited, the way that, you know, especially with Mullen in such fine form, and kind of perhaps now this situation we find ourselves in where our best formation is either playing Wes behind Mullen or Ironside up top alongside him as a foil. So perhaps his game time is going to be limited, but hopefully that, you know, his development will still, you know, will still be there with the club. And, you know, I guess it's a positive being around a group of players when you're doing well and you're, you know, performing in the league and you're in a good sort of position up the top of the table. It's good for sort of progression and development. So yeah, good bit of news or a good move to sort of sign him up for a longer contract. In terms of whether we're going to be, you know, offering any more long-term contracts, I'd be astounded if those conversations weren't happening. But I think the club also needs to be very mindful about the financial position that we find ourselves in. So it's a, I guess it's a fine balancing act. My biggest hope is that Kyle Noyle is someone they're talking to about contract extension, because a candidate for player of the season so far, and, you know, probably the best right back in the league, and his contract runs out in the summer. So I'm hoping that conversations are being had there, but, you know, it's only October. Usually we don't see contract extension news until the new year, like January time. So I'm not panicking that we haven't seen any other news like that so far, but I'm sure the club, you know, sure the club are organized enough to be sort of, you know, reaching out and having these kind of sort of plans and discussions at this point.
Yeah, I would say as well as that, it's probably important not to be too reactionary, you know, not to kind of take the gloss off anything that we've said and the sort of positivity that we've kind of talked about. But, you know, ultimately we are, what, 6-7 games in. You know, we don't need to be handing out long contracts to everyone just yet. You know, we can see how it goes up until sort of Christmas time, and then you can obviously start putting some of that into kind of action. But yeah, I mean, I'd agree with you, Jordan, in the sense that I think there's players within this squad that you can see playing at a higher level. And obviously, you know, the ideal thing based on how we started is that happens with us, and that obviously means that we'll have to tie them down to another contract. But yeah, I think Noyle's the obvious one. Mullen as well. I think he only signed the year, so you know, he's 25 years old. Looks like he's starting to hit that sort of peak part of the career that strikers often do around that age. But yeah, I think it's important that those conversations are happening. You know, Nib signing suggests that they are taking place. Yeah, I think it's just another example of perhaps some longer term thinking from the club, which has been so impressive, really. And or has been kind of a sign of what we've done so well over the past probably 6-7 months, probably since removing Calderwood. And do you know what? A lot of it might come back to, and obviously you talked a bit about, Jordan, about the sort of financial situation we find ourselves in. I wonder whether and this feels like a lifetime ago now, but the decision to save a bit of money on not giving like Richards an extended deal, Mark Richards last year, and I think Elliot Ward as well. I wonder if that's something that it's like, well, now we're in a position where we can offer contracts to people that we maybe want to keep sort of around now. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think there's obviously a few players in there that will attract attention at some point, and it's important that we're, you know, safeguarded against that when it does happen. But just on Nibs, I think really good to get him tied down. You know, I know it was a strange first season in professional football for a number of reasons for him, but I think what he's shown is he's got an eye for goal. He can get in the right position, and when he does, he can get on the end of things. And well, I think what was it, 6-7 goals last year, probably would have been double figures if the season had played out normally. And obviously, he can feel a little bit hard done by to not have had more minutes so far this season. But ultimately, he'll be well aware that as a striker, if there's people in front of you who are scoring goals, contributing to goals, it's difficult to get in the team. So I wouldn't be too worried if I was him. I'm sure he'll get his chance at some point. And based on what we've seen so far, I'd be pretty confident in saying that when he does get that chance, he'll take it. And with that in mind, obviously good to have him tied down for the next few years.
I think we've got to remember as well, Nibs is only 21. You know, like you said, Tom, it's, you know, last season was his first season in professional football. It wasn't even a full season. You know, he's only young, and he's gonna he might struggle to get game time this season, but I think, you know, something you mentioned there, who would you rather offer a contract extension to, a 37-year-old Mark Richards or a 21-year-old Harvey Nibs?
I'd offer one to a 38-year-old Wes Houlihan.
Classic.
But I've always been terrible with my own money, so don't listen to me, Cambridge United.
It's certainly interesting to see, and it's refreshing to be having positive conversations like this. Of course, we're always a positive pod, but, you know, just easier to be positive when Cambridge are banging in goals on top of the league. Jono added a second question as well, saying they say not to read the table until a couple of months into the season. But have we seen enough after six games to change our expectations for the coming season? And I suppose we should also caveat this with we've got 4 games in 11 days starting with Port Vale on Tuesday. So it's going to be a thick and fast fortnight for Cambridge. It might be a testing of how good they're going to be. How are you feeling about expectations, Tom? And how are you feeling about the next four games?
Yeah, I think we said in the last pod that we did that October is a big month for us. It will show us where we can realistically expect to be come the end of the season. I would stand by that. I think of the teams that we have to play, Scunthorpe was probably the game that you do expect to win. And obviously up next we've got Port Vale, a tough side who themselves will probably expect to be up there. I think we played Bolton. I think Salford are coming up quite soon as well. So there are some tough games, and I would stand by what we said before, that if we're still sort of in a similar position come the end of this month, then that's something that we should have realistic ambitions of being able to maintain. I think in terms of changing the expectations, I think absolutely. I think, to be honest, I don't think there really was an expectation going into this season. I don't think anybody had any real... you know, if we don't finish here or we finish below there, it'll be a failure. And we didn't really know what to expect. I think there was sort of cautious optimism that we'd made some decent signings, but there were still quite a lot of question marks about how it would all come together. But what we know now for sure that we didn't know sort of over the summer is that we're good enough. Certainly in isolated occasions from one game to the next, we're good enough to compete at the top end of the league. The question mark is, can we maintain it? Can we stay there for the kind of duration? And that's obviously the difficult bit, which is why winning promotion isn't easy. But I think the one thing that we've always maintained on this pod sort of throughout is that it's not the hardest league in the world to get out of. It's probably the opposite. But three teams will go up, four below them will compete in the playoffs. And at the moment, do you see seven teams better than us? No, probably not. So in that respect, definitely, I think we should be judging ourselves as a team that have realistic ambitions, not necessarily expectation, but ambition to finish in the top three. Really interesting one. You know, I'm sure like quite a lot of people listen to this pod, you know, listen to quite a lot of content around the Football League, and probably not too many more sort of respected voices in that space than the guys who run the Not the Top 20 podcast. And they said similar things. They said that at worst, there was a quote, they said at worst, we're probably a top 17 in terms of Cambridge. So yeah, we'll see. I don't want to sound like I'm getting too carried away off the back of one result or a run of games, but it is obviously hard to not look at what's happening and think there's a real chance here this season. So yeah, I think in terms of changing expectations, then the only thing I would say is that we know we can do it. We know that we're good enough. We just have to see if we can kind of maintain it, really.
If you look at the games we've played already, we've beaten three of the top six, of the current top six. So to say, have we seen enough after six games? We could be one of those other teams in the top six who have been beaten comprehensively in you know, a couple of teams' cases by us. So yeah, you know, six games, everyone's played six games. We've got more points than all but one of those teams.
Look, I don't know what you mugs are talking about. I always backed us to win the title, so my expectations aren't changing one bit.
Mr. Positivity.
Mr. Happy Clapper right here. no, I'm not Julian Roberts. I think it comes back to, the way Jono sort of puts that question is the correct way to sort of put it. He says, is it enough to change expectations rather than saying, you know, are we going to win promotion? Are we going to win the league? And you know, six games is a little bit early perhaps to sort of make big sweeping statements. But what I would say is when we were previewing the season, we didn't feel like we would be sort of competing with like the big boys that have spent the most amount of money. And so far, you know, you can see a couple of those still sort of knocking around the sort of top 10, although I think Salford dropped out of the top 10 this weekend. I still think they'll be there. I still think the money spent will, you know, the clubs that have spent money this season, I still think come the end of the 46 games, they'll be, you know, most of them will be in and around that top seven. I think the big thing that we were talking about when we previewed the season was just how much the pandemic and COVID will impact, you know, the rest of the other squads in League Two, you know, the sort of the average Joe kind of teams, you know, and how do we compare to them? Because we brought in some good signings, but, you know, we didn't bring in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of players. We had positions that, you know, admittedly we've tweaked with some loan moves, some very good loan moves, but we had quite a small squad and that was the worry. So we weren't sure how we would compare to sort of the other sort of averager teams. It's not even a word, but we'll go with it. And I think, you know, six games in, the result is positive and that, you know, we have got quality there that on our day makes us very sort of competitive in this league. And, you know, the other big thing that we have, and it was really evident yesterday, was team spirit. And that will get you really far in this league, that kind of togetherness, that spirit. But the big question, I guess, is, you know, how will it be if/when we hit a sticky patch? You know, how do we react to that? Do we have this, you know, the quality to react to that? I think with the exception of defence, we do have strength in depth now. So we should, you know, we should have options should the, you know, things start going a little bit wrong or need to be tweaked. So I think we've seen enough in the six games to sort of say, actually, we can revisit where we think, you know, we were going to, you know, how badly we were going to do this time round, and say, you know what, we have got on our day quality that should see us finish beyond the sort of 16th place that we were all kind of predicting. It's a little bit too early to then sort of upgrade that question and say, are we a team that's going to challenge for promotion? You know, and I think luck will be a real dictator this year for everyone. You know, squads are smaller, and I think luck will come into it around those that can avoid injuries and avoid suspensions and who can keep their, you know, their best sort of 11s together. And so far you know, with the exception of O'Neill being injured, we seem to have done quite well on that. So I think there is enough so far to sort of, question that sort of bottom third finish that perhaps most of us were predicting, but it's a long way to go yet.
I think, you know, it's probably another example of bullishness rising, but I think we've got all the kind of typical hallmarks of a team that can win promotion at this level. If you look at what they would usually be, the sort of criteria that you'd expect you would need to meet to go up, we're solid at the back. You know, we've just talked about the clean sheets that we're keeping. We're tough to break down. You look in the midfield, we've got players like Digby who provide that extra bit of steel in the spine of your team. Boateng does that as well. Creativity, you know, Dunk, Hannon, Houlihan, El Mazzouni. And then going forward, we've got a striker who can put the ball in the back of the net on a regular basis. And all the sort of parts seem to be there. And it will be interesting to see how it comes together. I'll say this cautiously, given the teams that we've got to play that are coming up. And we will know, like I keep referring to, you know, more after that. But in terms of expectations, in terms of ambitions, I think you look at the team that we've got here, and we do look like a team that could be up there come the end of the season.
It's all fine margins, isn't it? But certainly Cambridge have started really well, and a man at the centre of that, and a man who certainly deserves some credit and had his sceptics before the season, is Mark Bonner. He's at the helm for Cambridge United and has done some really good things and comes across really well. And we were lucky enough as a pod to catch up with Mark and have some time. So regular podcast contributor Jordan Warland and work experience Julian Roberts caught up with Mark.
Okay, got a treat for us on Under the Abbey Stand now. We quite often get called out online for not knowing what we're talking about, especially when it comes to football. But we're joined this afternoon by someone who knows a little bit more about football than us. I think he's got some badges or something. Very pleased to say we've got Mr. Mark Bonner on the line with us. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, chaps. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Pleasure's all ours, mate. Thanks for making the time to speak with us. Also got Julian here, who isn't as knowledgeable about football. More of a rugby man.
I was going to say, I was hoping you were about to introduce me there at the start, but don't worry.
Yeah, just third wheel in there, Julian. Cool. Look, I'm going to start with the big question that's on the lips of all United fans at the moment, Mark, and that is, by which month do you reckon we'll have the title won? Do you reckon it'll be done by April, or will it go into May?
Who knows, eh? We're in a nice spot at the moment, but it's obviously very early days. So we've got a lot of points to gather yet before we can probably consider where we're going to be ending up in the table. 5 games down, 41 to go. We're certainly not getting carried away, but we're obviously really encouraged by the start that we've made.
I mean, I'm getting carried away. I've booked the weekend away, second last weekend of the season, Harrogate. I think that'd be a lovely little promotion sort of weekend away. I think you said before that, you know, you don't really look at the table, you know, until 10 games in or whatever, but 5 games in, are you at all surprised by where we're sat in the table and the points return that we've got and the goal return that we've got? Like, was any of this, was this expected in your eyes, sort of going through pre-season?
Well, I knew we were building a team and a squad that could be really competitive. And we've had a tough start to the season. You know, you look at the teams we've played against and where they currently sit in the table, I think we're off to a nice start. But it is only that, really. And I think what it does is it just creates a bit of buy-in from everybody, gets some confidence for players, and gives us something to hang on to as we go into the next busy spell that we've got. And, you know, yeah, the league table isn't of huge relevance at this stage because it probably hasn't taken complete shape yet. And maybe when we get to that 10 or 12 game point, it will have done a little bit more, but that still won't be reflective of where it will end up after 46 games. So we have to keep ourselves focused. I don't think there's any danger of that from our boys to not do that. And whilst it doesn't matter, it is encouraging and it's nice to look at when we are where we are because we haven't been there for a while. And we want to stay there. It's not my job to get excited, but you are completely within your rights too, because that's what being a football supporter is about. And also, at the moment when people can't come and watch us in the stadiums, we want to put something on at least that people enjoy watching and can keep connected with us at a time where it's very difficult to maybe do that.
you say it's nice to look at. It's great, isn't it? You know, normally before the season starts, being a C, we're right up there, you know, in sort of second, third place, whatever. And you just normally expect that to sort of drop off quite quickly. So yeah, five games in to see us actually going up the order is brilliant. It's lovely to see and it's well-deserved. Been some great performances in there. Bit odd seeing the team above us with a minus one goal difference and knowing that we beat them 5-0, but I guess it's a silly sort of part of the season, isn't it? You know, we're sort of figuring it out and everyone's potentially going to beat everyone. But going into the season, what sort of expectations did you sort of have at the back of your mind? You know, did you think, you know, I want to push for, you know, top seven, top 10, or did you have any sort of, or did you not want to sort of put like a, you know, a league position in your mind about where you wanted to aim for with the boys?
Yeah, I don't think we do talk about the outcome really. It's been a lot more about a process for us of building a team, building a way of playing, creating a bit of a style that people can see what a Cambridge United team looks like in the mould that we want to try and build. And that's taking time, but we are getting there. And I think people will be encouraged by that. And they'll see some signs in this team that they think, yeah, I can quite relate to that. The work ethic of the team, the robustness and durability of a team to make themselves hard to beat, a team with attacking intent and lots of ways of scoring goals. And that's what we're sort of trying to work towards. Almost the best teams that I've seen in Cambridge colours over the years. You want to try and put that together and have a bit of excitement to you. Honestly, no one sets out to be average. We want to be competitive. We want to be competing in the top half of the table for sure. We have to make progress from where we've been in the last couple of years in terms of league position, in terms of style, in terms of number of goals scored. So there's no doubt about that. But from the very outset, and I've said this a few times now, and it might sound a little bit cheesy, but it's genuinely true. We've got to create a team that players love being part of and supporters are desperate to come watch. And if we do that, that will probably mean that we've got a bit of style about us, that we've won a few games and that people enjoy being part of it. So it's almost about that developing some pride and identity first, because we believe if we do that, then the league position and the results will follow.
Awesome. I mean, you talked about process at the start there. Am I right in assuming that process goes throughout the club and that goes up to, say, the board level? Because one of the, you know, the next question we sort of had was start of the season, guessing that Paul Barry or others on the board probably would have sat you down, maybe not face to face with social distancing and that, and said, look, this is what we'd like to see this season in terms of, you know, aspirations and league positions. And I'm just wondering, you know, what sort of expectations came down from the board and has that at all, I don't know, do you feel it's changed a little bit given the sort of the pandemic and the other sort of challenges that our club and all the other clubs sort of face in terms of, you know, budgets and money? Like, is the expectation still as it would be in a normal season from the board, or is it maybe sort of a little bit different given the world that we're in this season?
I wouldn't say this is reflective to us, but I would say that across football at the moment, the way the world is and even at the beginning of lockdown, things have changed and moved on so much since then. And there hasn't been the financial bailout yet. And there was the promise and everyone expecting fans to have been in by now. And all those things have changed. So in fact, the financial challenges have probably just grown and got tougher and tougher as it's gone through. So I think there would be an element of football clubs that would say, do you know what, if we're in business and in the same league next season, then that's success for a lot of people. And then, of course, as a real base level, you'd say that. But I don't think that's where we're coming from. I think those two things are obvious from our point of view. But we want to be a competitive team. That are the things that I've spoken about. And it's an obvious thing to jump to about myself, the board, and almost seeing these things as separate things. But one of the strengths, I think, in our club right now, I'll be amazed if people haven't seen this over the last 6 months, is how united and together the club is all the way through it. And I think the club have carried themselves outstandingly over the past half a year since all this began. And the reason I say that is because it isn't about me reporting to the board or the board reporting to me in all of these ways. Myself, Ben Strang, work really closely with the board. We've met the board as a group of senior leaders, the board of directors, the owner, every week of lockdown. The communication's great. We've got a plan and a strategy that we're going together on. And I think that that's the reason why we've had a little bit of consistency and there is a bit of stability and togetherness in the club now, is because we're all going together on something. We're all on the same page. So we all want to create that team that I'm talking about. And we're seeing some encouraging signs early on, but we're by no means there yet. And the idea about ambition, that's an attitude. Ambition's a mentality. You could put it down to how deep someone's pockets are if you want, but it isn't really, because you could see clubs that have spent massive amounts of money and not had success, and the opposite would be true as well. So our ambition is to be as successful as we can. We want to compete at the top end of a table, and we don't think the resources dictate that. Strategy does, togetherness does, work ethic does, and that's why we're in a good place at the moment, and we've given ourselves a chance because we're full of people in the club that want to do that and want to work together and are on the same page.
And also, I mean, for yourself, obviously, the pandemic and COVID has been at the forefront of everyone's conversation in every walk of life, right? But for yourself, you have to wait 6 months before taking charge of your first game as a permanent boss. What was it like over that time? Like, were you scared that the dynamic might have changed between your time as a caretaker and your time as permanent boss, given everything that was going on and the wait before you took charge permanently?
I think quite naturally that there is a difference between those two roles, really. And even though not so much has changed, I would say that. I think if you remember a staff or a player here when I was the caretaker or in charge, I don't think you'd say you've seen massive change in the way that I've been or we've been or the way we're trying to do things. So obviously that period of time has created one, mass challenges. We were all on furlough for a while and things shut down and obviously create their own challenges in that period of time. But I have to say, from the playing perspective, the players came back and have got themselves in brilliant shape, and that's credit to them and their commitment to make sure they're ready when we came back in. And it's credit to the staff that have created the programs for them to do that. Matt and Mikey have done really well overseeing that and managing players throughout the lockdown period. And look, the lockdown period probably gave me and Ben and a chance to really get some plans and strategy in place that we might not have had we had games twice a week. You know, the spell of caretaker, I think I had 6 or 7 games in a really short period of time. And that was hectic. And the beginning of lockdown gave us a bit of time to reflect and think and get some plans in place. And when I talk about a whole strategy of everybody working together, the reason why we were able to recruit the players that we were, it was a plan, the squad we wanted to build, the type of player we wanted, the positions that we wanted. We had the majority of players in place for the beginning of pre-season, which was all part of the plan. That was backed by the board of directors that were on board with that and allowed us to do business early at a time of real uncertainty. So obviously the solid start that we've made is probably a reflection of everybody's good work over that time. And now we have to try and maintain that and continue getting ourselves to a next level.
Obviously, you've not had any fans, home or away in stadiums the whole time that you've been the permanent boss. Obviously, you did when you were caretaker over numerous spells, but your time as a permanent boss, you've had no fans in. And I'm just wondering, you know, what's it like for you, the other coaches and the players, not having fans there? And I mean, maybe it's a bit of a dodgy question to ask, but given some of sort of the results that have happened, especially not just in our league, but you look at the Premier League with goals galore, has not having fans in, you know, had some positives? Obviously, you know, we want fans back in. It's better to have them there. But yeah, what's it been like, sort of pros and cons of having, you know, fans in grounds?
Yeah, it's quite a debated area at the moment. It's a good question. It's probably too basic and too early to suggest that no crowds equals more goals or, you know.
Less probably, people on your back.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit early to judge that. But what I would say is, wow, I mean, you know, we're scoring goals and you turn around to celebrate and then you realise there's no one there. Yeah. It is a really strange situation. And huge credit has to go to the players for how they've, got themselves. And I'm not suggesting that players wouldn't, but there is definitely an element around when you know there's scrutiny because there's people in the crowd. Mm. That level of motivation and focus, you've seen it before when you go to certain games that have real low atmospheres and quite a quiet crowd. It can affect the tempo and the intensity of the game. We haven't seen that at all. We've seen a real intensity, and that's pleasing because that's what we're trying to be. We want to be a team that really starts fast, and I think we've done that in the majority of games. So that's great because that's credit to the characters that we've got, there's certainly a difference. You know, I guess the upside is you don't hear the criticism when a bad pass goes. So, but at the same time, the wins aren't the same when there's no people there to celebrate with, and the celebrations are over. And the Joe Ironside saying when we won at Birmingham 1-0, full-time whistle went and he goes mad and he's looking around for someone and just went quiet within like 10 seconds. And, like, all right, that's mad. And he walk off the pitch. So it's a strange situation. I went last night and watched St. Neots, celebrated the second goal when St. Neots went 2-0 up. Like just being a football fan in the ground, and there was 250 people there, I think. And I just thought, blimey, I've missed that. There was just noise when a goal went in, and we've missed that so much. So, you know, it's frustrating when you know there's 250 there and there's 400 at Cambridge City in the FA Cup, and there'll be none at Scunthorpe this weekend and none against Port Vale on Tuesday. And that's frustrating for us because we need it and we want it. Whilst there might be some benefit, I don't know yet. It's probably too early. The sooner we get people back, the better.
It would be very 2020 for Cambridge City to get through to the first round of the Cup, draw us, and no one can go see it. It would just be typical of this year. So watch that happen. Good luck to City.
This is definitely also the year that we draw Borough in the Cup, isn't it? Everyone knows that.
Yeah, everyone knows that. Yeah.
We've drawn them in the Cup, lads. The EFL Trophy, you know, that competition you
love. Oh, come on, Mark. I wanted to talk about Wes Hoolan, if we could, for a minute. I know you're probably sick and tired of talking about him, but there's been a few performances. The Newport game, the Morecambe game come to mind, where it's such a pleasure to watch a player like that play for your club with the elegance that he plays. And I just wanted to ask how that sort of transfer came about and what sort of an impact he's had on the training ground.
Well, training ground, he's had a good impact, but his impact, we brought him in to help us win games. So, you know, he won't train as much as the other lads because we need as many games out of him as we can get. And his impact on match day has been brilliant. So that's the big thing for us, how much he can impact games for us and how often we can get his best level out of him. And what's exciting is that we've seen that a number of times already, and I think he'll only get better as he gets used to playing. He hasn't played the run of games he's had already this season for a while. So I think that's good. But as a character, he's just great. I mean, his composure's outstanding on the pitch, but he's that sort of man as well. And he's just, he's had experience of promotions. He's had experience of playing at the top level. That rubs off on people. But also, he's just a real good guy. He's real solid, real professional, does his job brilliantly. And at 38, he just shows people how to behave as a bloke, but how to live as a footballer and how to get the most out of yourself. And I think that experience can only be good for any of our players, not just the younger ones, any of our players, and all of us. So that's great. And we were delighted when that was a possibility in the summer. We weren't sure of that at the beginning. We weren't sure if he was going to play again when he came back from Australia, not from an injury point of view, but whether that was just sort of the end of his career. But he'd made contact with Ben to say he was back and would we be interested. So I met him and wanted to see, you know, how serious was he? What did he want out of his final year as a footballer? And, you know, what was the interest and where was he at from a... I don't think there's ever a question about his quality as to whether you'd sign him or not. And to be honest, he's super fit, so not so much about him physically. The thing you want to know is he hungry? Does he really want to come in and contribute to a team that we're building and add to that? And that was really obvious quite quickly that it was. So that was the quickest and easiest deal that we did. And we were delighted once it was sorted.
Talk about his character and how professional he is. Does that then help you get over the fact that you're younger than him and you're sort of asking him and sort of telling him what you want him to do? Like, has that relationship been fine? Like, because it's not a usual one that you see in football. I mean, to be fair, you see it a little bit more now. There's a couple of sort of younger managers in the league. I think the guy at MK Dons is a little bit younger than you. But for the most part, it's not that. Yeah, for the most part, it's not a relationship really that you see, is it? Someone's younger on the touchline asking someone older, you know, to follow instructions. But has his sort of attitude made that easier for you?
Honestly, I've never once thought about it, because I know it might seem like a big thing for people, but I've coached since I was 16 and I've always done a job I shouldn't have been doing, apparently, for my age. So I've always worked under or coached older players than me. So it's just not a thing. it's just not a thing at all. But the fact that obviously my age is close to a number of the senior ones and Wes himself, that probably means I can relate to people a little bit more maybe than others, perhaps. I don't know. But yeah, there's certainly no issues there whatsoever. And just like a number of the boys that we've signed, we did recruit massively on character as well this year. We wanted to make sure we had a group of blokes that were ready to fight for each other and fight for us. And I think that shows.
How often does he talk about the fact that he scored at the Euros? Just out of interest.
I think that's the best thing about really, really good players, really good people, really talented ones that have achieved lots. They never tell you about it because they're just humble and they get on with it. And his challenge now is us and helping us be better. So that, yeah, you'd have to tease a story out of him. And I like that in someone's character where they're just quite humble and under the radar. And I think that's quite a nice mentality for us to have. We don't have to shout from the rooftops about what we want to do. We just got to get on with being good and hope that everybody else does the talking for us.
Absolutely. To bring it back to yourself, I'm sure you know this, but I Googled Mark Bonner and I've got two results. I've got one, a Scottish actor best known for his role as Bruno Jenkins in Casualty. And then I've got two, the former Blackpool and Cardiff City midfielder who scored 18 goals in 355 appearances before retiring and opening a furniture shop in Chorley. You've only recently been given your own Wikipedia page. Proud moment, I'm sure. But I just wanted to ask a bit more about your background, growing up in Cambridge, and were you a United fan growing up?
Yeah, I was a United fan growing up, actually. And a number of people that would have taken me to games as I was younger, as a young kid, just a fan of football. Cambridge United was the club that was so accessible to go and watch live football. That's why I think it's a great place for young people to come and engage with full-time football and professional football. And I love the fact that when you come to a club like this, you're so close to the action. You know people, you get access to people that you don't get in the bigger clubs. There's a much more personal feel. And I found that out from a really young age and made a connection with the club straight away. And that never leaves you, does it, as a football fan at all? So yeah, there was an element of being a fan as a kid growing up and just loving football. And then obviously when the chance came to work at the club, when I left school, I got into community coaching. And I knew that was what I wanted to do, really. I wanted to coach. And then we went through the drama of 2005, relegation and administration and academy closing and everything else. So moved to Southend for 6.5 years and worked in the academy there with Ricky Duncan and Luke Hobbs, who were here previously. And then 2011, I had the chance to come back to take the under-18s, which I took. And then obviously from there, I've worked in the academy and academy manager and I'm in the first team under a number of different coaches now that were all excellent for me and excellent to me, that has helped me sort of mould my idea of what it might look like when I got the opportunity. The opportunity came around a lot sooner than I thought it would. But I think when you get given a chance and an opportunity in life, you have to grab it and make the most of it.
What was the first United team that you remember watching as a youngster?
Trevor Benjamin, Martin Butler, Omar Rita, that sort of era. I mean, the games that really stick in my head are Notts Forest away, 3-0 down, 3-3, Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup. I remember Danny Wilson, I was a fan, got down to the team bus, and Danny Wilson got me on the bus to go meet Di Canio and Carboni and all that. It's little moments like that that you, I think stick with you forever. And just draw you to clubs.
What about some bad memories? Like, what about some terrible games or terrible seasons that you remember as a fan?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of highlights in different areas. I thinking of a highlight for a moment. The Roy McFarlane team was a team I really loved watching it, and I really enjoyed that team. I remember playing Brentford last game of the season, and it was when he gets promoted and all those sorts of things. Those highlights that stick in your head make you, I think, motivate you now in this position, particularly for me and for a lot of the players and staff, to create those sort of memories and moments for people. That's the kind of team you want to create. And when I talk about a team that people love coming to watch, one of the reasons will be how they play, but it will also just be by the highlights of certain games or certain moments or, in the end, success that really draw people to you. So that's what we're fighting for. Bad moments, I guess, you know, when you talk about administration, you talk about the relegation season, the academy being closed in 2005, those are really, really bad times for the club and dark moments. And you just know, having seen the football landscape over the last couple of years, some other clubs going through that, and some clubs really struggling through this moment now. You just hope that football can sort itself out, because you've got unbelievable empathy, having gone through that situation and seen what can happen to clubs and so many people's hard work. You just don't wish that on anybody's club or anybody's community, because, you know, we know the impact that we have on ours and that others have on their cities. So we need to make sure that we get through the period that we're going through, and other clubs do as well, because you don't want anyone to go through that.
I was going to ask about past managers that you've worked under at the Abbey. What did you learn from each of them? Because you've worked under, is it Derry, Dunn, Calderwood?
I spoke with Richard as well in the conference promotion year, and then little bits in the first year up and throughout the time there. So Richard was really influential on me and stay in regular contact with him. And he's a brilliant coach, really, really good coach, and a real good person. So I think you learn a little bit off of everybody, don't you, as you go through your life. And I had a very short period under Sean Derry, because I was in, and then Sean moved on at that time. So I was working with the youth team in the academy at the time. So very, very short period closely. But in all four cases, I think really good guys, really committed to the job, all had different styles of how they would coach or play, and different personalities. But you learn off of all of those. My most hands-on period was obviously working with Joe for a spell, and then little parts with Colin as well. And between Joe and Colin, obviously took three games in caretaker charge there as well. And from my perspective, that was quite a good experience for me as well, just to see the job from a different angle, and try and implement some of the things that I thought I would do if the chance ever came around again. But all different personalities and characters, and I probably enjoyed little parts with all of them, and learned a lot throughout that period.
In terms of the youth team, you must have overseen so many young players coming through the United ranks. What are your highlights of being involved with the youth team and seeing them progress into their first teams, whether here or elsewhere?
Yeah, look, I think when you work with young players, any age group or any for any period of time, you see so many players, and obviously some of those come through into the first team. But because of the time you spend with people, and how you work with players so closely, you're as proud of the ones that go on and achieve something somewhere else or in their education as you are as the ones that go on and play in the first team. It's a massive jump, and it's a real challenge to consolidate yourself professionally as a footballer, and one, get the opportunities to do it, but then take that opportunity. It's such a short time frame. Obviously, we've got a couple in the team at the moment, or in the squad at the moment, that are contributing more than others. So Harry Darling is probably the one who's made the most appearances so far, nearly 60 appearances, I think. And he's starting to consolidate himself quite well. So they're the sort of ones that obviously you look at as the headlines of, right, he's done well. But on his development journey, he's nowhere near the end of it yet, and there should be a lot more growth and development in him. So we're pleased with his progress so far, but certainly he's not reached the end of that point yet. Others are a little bit earlier on in their journey, haven't got to his point yet, and we're trying to get them there. But it's an ever-evolving thing when you work with young people and young players. That development process goes on a long time, and sometimes people want it to happen really quickly, but development and learning takes years, and it takes a lot of bad moments as well. You know, there's a lot of things going around social media at the moment around how it was then, how it is now. Mm-hmm. And it's
perspective I've looked at. I think we did one of those. I don't know if you saw that one.
I didn't know.
All right. It might include your face and the picture of the League Two trophy, but we'll let you find that out on your own time.
but somewhere between those two pictures is a lot of bad days and a lot of challenges that you have to overcome to get there. And sometimes we don't talk about those, and we ignore those, and we don't value those, but they're the bits that matter most.
Yeah.
Because they're the reason why you do or don't come through the other end. So I think that's part of the enjoyment of working with young players, is helping them navigate that period in that process.
Right, I think we're going to have to wrap it up a little bit because we've been talking for a while, but it pains me to wrap it up because I could carry on talking about Roy McFarlane and that team for hours. And we did mention the 7-2 against Mansfield that still think about. Anyway, I'm going to end with one final question, a bit of a sad question here at UTES HQ. You've probably seen the news today that, unfortunately, Kwezi Appiah has found himself a new club. He's joining Northeast United FC in the Indian Super League. With him finally signing at another club, are you glad that you're not going to be asked about him signing for Cambridge, at least for this season?
I haven't actually been asked directly very many times, but he's a good player in the league, and he did very well in his spell here. So I know people's affection towards Kwezi, but that was never on the cards for us this year. We've been really clear on who might and who would, and where we were going with the squad this year. And we're really pleased with the squad that we've built, and obviously wish him well. And look, keep in contact with him like I do with many players that we worked with in the past, and obviously wish him well. It's a good move for him.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time today, Mark.
That's an absolute pleasure.
Really interesting insight there to hear from Mark Bonner, and great interview from the lads. Just nice to get a bit more information about Mark, a bit more about his history with the club. You know, he's a fan of the club, as well as being a faithful employee and now our leader. Jordan, just really nice to hear from Mark, isn't it? And, you know, hear a bit about his history with Cambridge.
I mean, you know me, mate. I'm just happy to talk to anyone about Roy McFarlane's promotion season. So I'm just glad I've got his number and can drop him a few texts about that. He has politely said stop messaging me, but I'll persevere. It's, you know, it's a bit like my Tinder game. I'll break them down eventually. But yeah, no, thank you to Mark and the club for arranging that chat for us. It was really great to sort of speak to him. And yeah, I just was really impressed by, you know, how they approach the season and, you know, just how sort of strategy based they are. I was really sort of taken by that. And I guess it's just interesting that someone that wasn't a former professional footballer is this sort of clued on about how to sort of run a club. So yeah, it was great speaking to him. And like you say, it was great to also reminisce about some of his experiences as a fan, because I feel like that was a story that wasn't massively reported when he got the job full time. I know there was one article that sort of mentioned it, but I feel like it's not common knowledge that, you know, he grew up a United fan. He stood on the Habin like all legends do. And, you know, that he has that sort of connection to the club. So, yeah, that was really good for me.
Yeah, I would say pretty interesting to hear from him as well. I think probably the first thing that kind of strikes you about Bonner is how well he speaks. I think that's been the case and something that's been pretty impressive throughout, ever since he took sort of interim charge, obviously immediately after Calderwood left. You know, sort of intricate details about tactics and that sort of thing. Like, I'm sure we'll kind of come to learn more out about him. But yeah, I think he speaks really well. Obviously, that interview is another example. Obviously, good to see kind of maintained communication from the club as well, which is another theme that's been so impressive sort of throughout this whole sort of period of time. Yeah, long may that continue, and hopefully, you know, someone with such close ties to the club can really kind of crack on and start to achieve some genuine success for us, because he's one of those guys, he comes across as one of those guys that I think you just really want to see do well, like you really want him to achieve. And it seems like he's got a clear vision of how he wants to do that. And yeah, she comes across really well.
Yeah, I think the fact that he, you know, grew up a Cambridge fan, understands what the club is about. We're not a club, especially with a particular philosophy, in that some other clubs are. I mean, our reputation for a long time was always just lump it up to the big man up front, you know. So for him to kind of understand what Cambridge is, what it means to people, I think is really important. And, you know, since John Taylor, we've not had a manager with that kind of connection with the fans. And I think that's important, because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't happen much in football nowadays. Managers come and go so quickly. The days of managers doing kind of five years or more, you know, I can't remember the last time we had a manager that did that long. So I like to see it. Yeah, I really like to see it. And, you know, the fact that he's backing up his off-pitch activities with some good performances, some great performances on the pitch as well.
He's going to look great with a League Two winners' medal around his neck as well, isn't he?
He is.
He's going to look great hoisting that trophy from the Guildhall.
He did. He did field those questions pretty well, because there was a couple there, Jordan, that it might have been a challenge for him.
I mean,
can you imagine if he just said, "We're going to have it wrapped up by December." Can you imagine if he just been like, if he really gone for it?
And just dropped the mic and left.
I mean, he really went for it on his comment about our support for the EFL trophy. So, cheers, Mark.
Yeah, fair play to Mark Bonner. He gives as good as he gets. But yeah, thanks to the club. It was really great to have that insight and great to speak to him. Just before we wrap things up, episode 5 of the fanzine is going to drop soon, and we're taking submissions. So yeah, anything positive that you've got that you want to feature in there, anything nostalgic, drop us an email, abbeystandpod@gmail.com or at abbeystandpod on the socials. So yeah, we'd love to see anything that you've got for us out there. Bringing this positive pod to a close then, Jordan Warren, thank you very much.
I have thoroughly enjoyed podding from the position of top of League 2. Long may it continue.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Thank you very much, mate. My pleasure.
And Owen Keenan, thank you.
Thank you.